Boy Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hi, guys.
And our baby, Alex Fisella.
The internet is for pods.
If you couldn't guess, this week we listened to the original cast album of Avenue Q, which I hadn't done in a long time. But first, Baby Met World.
Baby Met some world. First of all, I took the villain song I was talking about last week, and my original plan, like I told you guys, to find an arranger was I had two guys that I knew that were very excited about the gig, and I was going to give them the same song and see what they come up with. And I was going to do the prologue song, but then I thought, this villain song is the strongest one I have. It's also simpler, so why don't I give that to them? So I still haven't given it to one of the guys, but the one I'm closer to, my friend Rick, who you met when we all went to that play, I gave it to him and he just started to work on it. And I asked him like, what kind of ideas do you have? Cause this is sort of it's not anything that's going to be finalized. It's like, I want to see how you hear my material and what does it sound like to you that you would add to it? And he was telling me all sorts of stuff like this piano riff. I want to double on a harpsichord and I want to add, this for the string. And it was all stuff that I was like, this is all exactly what I wanted to hear in terms of that orchestral relationship. So that made me super happy. And then I showed one of our dear listeners, Liz Hersey, I showed the villain song. And she goes, so this is the hero, right? And I said, no, it's the villain. She's like, well, then why am I rooting for him so hard? Because I'm a damn good writer, that's why. Yeah. Yeah, so I think I may have already nailed my sympathetic villain. Because basically the theme of that song is he's telling you he has PTSD, but he's in a time period where they don't know what that is yet. So there's kind of a poignancy to he's describing this illness that he doesn't even know exists. Yeah. Second of all, I watched a movie called The Five Bloods, the new Spike Lee movie, and Norm Lewis was in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I'm realizing, like, I'm no stranger to the, oh, it's that guy phenomenon because I'm a film fan. But now I'm starting to realize that a big chunk of that guy's is Broadway people.
Yeah.
Oh, that guy looks familiar. Oh, I've seen him on stage.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, why does this guy look familiar? Oh, it's Javert from that concert. Cool.
Yeah. And now you can find the joys of IBDB as well as IMDB.
Oh, I've dabbled a little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It's not as
user-friendly. It's really not.
It used to be so much worse. I remember like you couldn't get it on your phone, really. Like you had to be on a browser. It was terrible, but it's a much better interface now. Whoever fixed IBDB, good job.
Yeah.
But also Broadway World has that whole like list of people's credits.
Can I do a little mini word of the week?
Yes.
Before we actually do word of the week.
Little mini word.
It's a little one. Just because I'm for the listeners out there, I'm a little hungover today.
We're also both just on our first cups of coffee.
So yeah.
Please give us grace.
there is a term that you all know that you need to know, and it's just an explanation. There's a term called equity cot.
Do you need one?
I need one right now, like pretty bad. In most regional and in Broadway contracts, it is specified in
your contract
in a equity contract that each dressing room, now personal and or like a large shared dressing room, has to have a cot of some kind or some place where you can lay down. And it's become colloquially like a term in the industry of just like of when someone maybe overindulged the night before and it's like, oh, where are they? It's like, oh, they're on the equity cot, they'll be back.
I would kind of love that if like comedy shows had that, because
now
sometimes I need to lay down between sets and just like clear my mind.
Telling me you go into a comedy club green room and you see a cot there, you're actually going to get anywhere near it?
No, but like if I was desperate enough, there's a threshold. Sure. But I have seen people sleep on the open mic floors, and that to me, first of all, is sociopathic. Yeah. Second of all, maybe we just fill that need with a cot, so at least it's not on the floor. But if you would sleep on the floor at an open mic, maybe you deserve to, because that's fucking weird.
That's insane.
Yeah. I've seen people do it.
I also just love, like, what people consider their equity cut.
Yeah.
Like at Searchlight, okay. They had couches.
Yeah, that was fine.
The equity cot. That was fine. I did an off-Broadway.
Those were comfy couches. I was okay with those being the equity cot. No, we had a cot too in the back.
Not in the girls' room.
In the guys? The guys had a cot.
Maybe like you could roll it out, but I'm pretty sure it was just there. The couch. Anyway, we met World, but also I thought it could be Word of the Week.
Word of the week?
Ratatouille, the TikTok musical.
I'm excited for this.
Did you watch it?
I don't know if it is fully done, because I watched one of those compilations that was just little bits of it, of the TikTok strung together.
Yeah, so it happened on Friday at 7, January 1st.
Okay,
it's
I didn't
a $5 donation to the Actors Fund. And then you can watch, so it like premiered basically on Friday and then all weekend. It's probably down by the time you are listening to this, but Alex, you still have today.
Okay, I want to see that, because I listened to, when I saw the YouTube cut together of just before for this premiere, I listened to a little bit of it, because I had just watched the movie too. Like, it took me forever to get around to that movie, and I was like, these songs are good. And they're in that Alan Menken style.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was insane that a bunch of like kids on TikTok wrote some songs all at once and it went viral, and then Broadway people were like, all right, let's do it.
Yeah.
I thought it was really fun. I watched it on Friday. I had a few friends involved, so I had been like hearing all about putting it together. Yeah, I wish either of you had watched it so we could talk about it more.
Sorry, no.
So basically, to get around, if you're not on TikTok, get on TikTok. It's my favorite thing. But basically, like, it just became this thing that people were like contributing to a Ratatouille musical, and we're calling it like the first ever crowdsourced musical. And then Jeremy O'Harris, who wrote Slave Play, is kind of like a big Broadway person on TikTok. And he was hilarious. And someone on one of his like live streams was like, will it ever actually happen? And he's like, absolutely not. Disney would never give us the rights. La, 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 la. And then 2 days later, he was like, I was wrong. It's a benefit for the Actors Fund. And so Disney gave us the rights. Like, because no one was actually making money. It was just to benefit the Actors Fund. Disney was like, yeah, okay. Because they're just opening a Ratatouille ride. And they're like, good cross promotion.
Hell yeah, especially if all these people are going to just do it for us, we might as well just give them the rights.
Yeah. So it was hilarious. It was just like an hour long, because they did however many songs had been like written and went kind of viral are the songs they used. And they wrote one extra one. The guy that wrote the main song wrote a new one. And it was cool. Titus Burgess was Remy. Wayne Brady was his dad. What's his name? Adam Lambert was the brother. And that's what one person said that like kind of made me tear up at the end, is someone tweeted, he was like, hey guys, like, just a reminder that a 17-year-old high school student that's been home alone for the last year basically wrote a TikTok, a 1 minute song, uploaded it to TikTok, and now Adam Lambert of Queen is singing it live. And I was just like, oh my god, like, these kids like really,
they made a thing,
did something.
Yeah,
it was very cool.
Yeah, we like TikTok here at Schmidt HQ.
Yeah, it's a fun time. My favorite thing though is like, there were people on TikTok that didn't know this was happening, like the way the algorithm works.
It's like, one thing that's really interesting about the internet is that it's really connecting, it's connecting people in such an amazing way, but it's also like
giving us new ways to fight.
Yeah, but it's also like, it's with these new algorithms, they're like able to like pinpoint like every aspect of someone's personality. And so it's really just connecting you with the 10 people in the world that are exactly like you.
Yeah.
That like have the, they're like, this isn't, it's like, you can't be in our little club of the 10 people who are into these 10 things.
Yeah. It's like when I found a TikTok that was like, if you've made it this far, you have come to No Top Sheet TikTok.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I hate Top Sheets, but how did you know anything I did?
Yeah.
I don't know what that means.
My TikTok
I don't use a top sheet.
Oh, you mean literally sheets.
A top sheet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
It's that specific, Alex. It's that specific.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was an online term. I was like, what? Like when you fax something?
People who don't use the top sheet.
Huh.
Which I do not.
Okay. I'm a big fan of the top sheet.
Oh, really?
Ends like up at
the bottom of the bed.
Yeah. We don't even put it on the bed anymore.
No. Hmm. We got new sheets for Christmas and I washed the top sheet, but it's in the closet.
But I'm saying this is the kind of wild specificity.
Yeah. Yeah. That the fact that the algorithm picked you out for that, like, oh yeah, Black Mirror is not as far a distant future as we would all like to pretend it is.
No, man.
No.
Hope you like pigs.
That crowdsourced musical one's going to be fun though.
Yeah. I don't know. It does remind me of Black Mirror, even though I've only seen two episodes.
Yeah.
Because it's too scary.
Yeah, it's very scary.
It's very spooky.
What are we even talking about anymore?
I don't know.
We were just talking about Ratatouille, and we started talking about TikTok algorithms, which essentially built Ratatouille. So
Yeah.
But it was like a really exciting thing to watch over the fall while it was happening. Because like a new song would pop up and everyone would love it. And then someone would like say, this is my choreography for this song. These are the puppets I made. This is this guy called Shoebox Musicals. Does little models of sets, like really intricate models that like a scenic designer would show the cast on the first day. So he made like five different sets for Ratatouille, and the like the hold screen before the preview started or the premiere started was that.
That's cool.
Which was cool. It was just like crazy thing to watch. And they raised $1 million for the Actors Fund.
Oh, good. What's interesting to me about it is it was a crowdsourced musical, but it still had a very clear genre aim. Like they, like I said, they were all kind of written in that Alan Menken, like Aladdin, or like Beauty and the Beast kind of a style. And the fact that it was a TikTok crowdsourced musical, but it wasn't a wild stylistic mess, that it retained a vision is really interesting to me.
Yeah, somehow they were all like, it's a Disney musical.
Yeah.
But also it's like, you got to know if you want to, if you want to write something and sell it, it's like, you got to know who you're selling to.
Yeah. And they also, not only did they pick one genre, they picked the perfect genre. Cause that's how you should do Ratatouille the musical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You lean into the cartooniness of that kind of animated sort of poignancy, sweet style that he did.
I know.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Avenue Q.
Yes. Will this be our most ribald episode, you think?
Our most what?
Ribald episode. A lot of naughty talk at Avenue Q.
Oh, yeah.
Ribald?
I don't really know the term.
I don't know what that means.
Ribald is like, oh, that's, you shouldn't be saying that. Like, it's naughty talk.
Oh, I see.
It might be pronounced ribald. I say ribald.
Oh.
I've never heard that word either way.
I've heard it, always heard it as ribald. I didn't really.
Okay, then maybe I'm wrong, but I've always been saying
it. You might be correct. I don't know.
Oh, I don't know.
Dachshund.
The point is.
I also thought dachshund was pronounced dachshund.
You sure did.
So don't ask me anything.
That was a great day.
It was a good day.
I've written many, many jokes. The one thing that Kimberly quotes more than anything wasn't even a joke. It was me just calling dachshunds. I almost did it again.
Yeah. And then I heckled you.
Yeah, you sure did. Yep. And we still got married. I married a heckler, everybody.
Oh, boy.
Then you are wrong.
It's a quality control heckle.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm just helping him be his best.
Yeah.
anyway, Avenue Q, the 2003 musical sensation. I know you have a personal history. I have some personal history. Alex, do you have any history with this show?
I actually do, because this was the first cast album that I admitted to myself was a musical that I ever fell in love with, because I was already in love with Superstar, but in my mind, that was a rock opera and didn't count. So this was the first, as I began my curiosity about Broadway, it started with this album, because my roommate in college was really into it. And, you know, I was in, whenever I found it, to 2015 or whatever, I was just like trying to listen to a lot of new music to just expand my horizons. And I thought, why don't I give Avenue Q a try? And then I listened to it, and then that's when it clicked. Oh my God, I like musicals and I've missed out so much time. So this album is very important for my Broadway history genesis.
Amazing. I had this album in middle school. And I have vivid memories of listening to it with my dad in his convertible.
Hmm.
And then I think it accidentally got left in that convertible when he traded it in for a more practical car. Because I remember being like, did you get Avenue Q out? And he was like, no. But it like lived in the Saab.
That's funny.
Yeah, but I remember being like 14 and listening to this with my dad and just laughing our butts off. But also, what an inappropriate musical to be listening to my father.
Yeah.
But even my mom thought it was funny. Like, we would listen. It was like we listened as a family.
Yeah.
And we thought it was hilarious. And then I also, it was the same season as Wicked, but it beat Wicked, which was a huge upset.
Yeah.
And was like a fun year. It's one of the first Tonys I like vividly remember watching. And there's a documentary about that Tony season.
Yeah. Cool. Well, because it's one of the better Tony seasons. Like, the fact that, like, there was actually a competition for Best Musical, I feel like in the past, like, 15 years, whoever wins, it's, like, pretty clear who's going to win.
Yeah, but you want to know the best part is that they lost all the drama desks and then won all the Tonys.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which is usually, like, such an indicator.
Oh. Of what?
Usually, like, whoever wins the drama desk wins the Tonys.
Oh, I see. I see.
And they're like a few months before. It's like the Golden Globes to the Oscars, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, like Wicked and Avenue Q are both excellent shows, but in completely two different, they have two different audiences.
Oh yeah. Wicked is meant to be big and Avenue Q is meant to be small.
Yeah. Wicked also got bad reviews.
Yeah.
And Avenue Q got good reviews.
Yeah. I always forget that.
I know. Because you've been conditioned to believe it's the best.
It's good marketing. You gotta give them credit.
Yeah, I always forget. We should rewatch that documentary. It was so good.
Yeah. My history with Avenue Q. I almost went on tour with this show, like, right out of college.
Huh.
I auditioned for it, like, my first summer. They were doing a non-union tour. I mean, this is my second summer, or my second year in New York. Had a ton of callbacks, learned all the puppets. They eventually cast, came down to me and another guy, and they eventually went with the other guy. And then I get a call 2 weeks later, or maybe 3 weeks later, and I had gone back. I was doing shows at Surflight at the time, and I went back down to keep doing the run of, I think it was 1940s Radio Hour. I can't remember what we were doing there, but went back down, got a call like 3 weeks later. Now, in that show, I had the show I was doing at Surflight, I had accepted my equity card because they needed one more equity contract in order to meet their minimum of contracts. Because I was like, they're like, does anyone want their card? And I was like, I'll take it. And they're like, cool, great. I get a call 3 weeks later, like, hey, it's not working out with this other guy. Like, can you get to rehearsals tomorrow? And I was like, guys, literally the day I like got my equity card paperwork and signed it and like got my card, they were like, hey, can you come to rehearsal? And I was like, guys, I literally just, if you had called an hour earlier, I could have done this. I could have not signed my paperwork and done this tour and then joined. So I did not go on tour with Avenue Q because of an hour's span.
What character were you?
The Nikki Trekkie track.
Okay.
The guy who the actor who plays Nikki also plays Trekkie Monster.
Yeah, I forgot that this show is dual rolled sometimes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, because Princeton is also playing Rod.
Yeah.
And those are the only two that are. Well, and obviously Kate Monster plays Lucy the Slut, but that's not quite as big of a role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they just switch puppets.
Yeah.
Because it's a puppet show.
Yep.
But one thing I appreciate about that is that it actually like falls into like the Muppet trope in that like the performer who did Ernie more often than not would also do Cookie Monster because they were similar voices.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a peek behind the curtain at something puppetry can show you that other genres can't, which is always really cool. Like, if you're reading a comic book and it's designed, like, Watchmen is designed to be unfilmable because it's meant to use all the tropes of comics. When you watch something, it's like, hey, this, what I'm seeing right now, can only make sense if this is a puppet show. It, like, it imparts something significant about the genre you're watching to you while you're taking in the story, which is really cool.
Yeah.
Jay, you're also a big puppet fan.
Oh, I love puppets. I almost got my master's in puppetry, but then my parents were like, hey, we're not paying for that. And I went, okay. They were like, we're already letting you get a musical theater degree, and you are a sophomore in college telling me you want to go to UConn for their puppetry department. Now, looking back at the industry that is show,
you would be making it.
I'd actually probably be doing really well with a puppetry degree.
Yeah.
Ironically, it was the financially responsible thing to do.
Actually, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be like learning a trade.
Kind of, yeah.
Not that you didn't learn a trade as an actor. No, but
it's, yeah.
Do you guys remember that scene in The Graduate when Ben's at that party and the old guy's like, I got one word for you, kid, plastics. It's like, Jay, I got one word for you, puppets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
This musical also, because it is such a parody of Sesame Street.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think it's so much funnier when you see it.
Yes.
Because it has like those little cartoon moments on the screens. And just like, you can see all of the puppets. Although like listening to it obviously is hilarious. I saw the show probably like 4 years after I got the cast album.
Oh.
Just like with a friend, because I'm pretty sure like we all liked the cast album, but we knew we probably shouldn't as a family sit in the theater and watch this.
Yeah.
Okay. Weird line to draw, but okay.
Well, there's stuff that's not on the album.
That's true.
And I agree with my past self. but I do remember that one time my mom took like her friends up to see Wicked and I took my friends to see Avenue Q. And like, there was so much not on the album. Like, the Bad Idea Bears aren't on the album.
No.
Or they are kind of, but you don't really know what they are.
Yeah.
The screen, like all the cartoon stuff. Like, it didn't click for me how much of a straight parody of Sesame Street it was until I was viewing. Also, because I'm not a huge Sesame Street person.
It's a dead on Sesame Street.
Yeah, they nail it.
They really nail it.
The fact that they never made a movie or anything like with this is so interesting to me, because the only thing that would elevate some of the jokes, like the Sesame Street jokes, would be if it was shot in the style of Sesame Street. That's the only thing that could elevate this.
I feel like that's because it would probably be so cheap to shoot, I feel like that's still inevitable at some point that they will do that. Whether or not they do it.
I don't know. Listening Wasn't it a back,
some of its opinions have really not aged well, which we'll get to.
And they have rewritten some of it, because I saw it off Broadway like a year before it closed, so like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And like all of the "for now" jokes are different, obviously.
Yeah.
And the mixtape is a physical CD.
Yeah.
So like some things like that have shifted. But yeah, some of the stuff, I don't know how anyone would have gotten away with right now.
Yeah, like the one that sticks out to me is everyone's a little bit racist. Because it's kind of right and kind of very wrong. Because on the one hand, it's saying like, hey, institutional racism like gets in your head. But the problem is it's like, it's also like, hey, you know, if you want to carve out a space for people of color, that's also racist. Like, no, it's not. And to be fair, this is written by a person of color, so I don't want to get on them too much, but like, yeah, that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I think it's just kind of a sign of the times thing, but I also think I think this show is written with the best of intentions.
Oh, absolutely.
So there's certain things that like, yeah. I mean, it hasn't aged super well, but what has?
Yeah, you know? And some of it ages pretty well. It's like the sex positive stuff is aged well.
Yeah.
The race stuff and just the Christmas Eve as a character, you can't.
Yeah,
true. You can't. And that also knocks out the more you rub someone, which is another big plot point. And like, so some of this is going to get in the way of it structurally as well.
Yeah. But also, I think, the concept of like having Gary Coleman in the show and having that be a punchline that like a real person, I think that like the Gary Coleman being in Avenue Q is like the most 2003 joke I've ever seen.
Also, no one knows who Gary Coleman is anymore.
No, for sure. But it was just, but like the, I don't think like comedy nowadays would be like, would go to such lengths to kind of like make fun of someone. They're not, they're celebrating them to a certain degree, but it's also is like, ah, oh, this like feels a little weird. It doesn't feel right anymore.
Which is why everyone's a little bit racist comes so early on in the show, because they're just like, hey everyone, this is going to cross some lines and you're allowed to laugh.
Yeah.
As I was listening through though, I think this is the first show I've listened to in a while that, and I know these normally don't work and they are very rare, but I would go see Avenue 2. You know what I'm saying? I would go see a sequel to Avenue Q.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Just like see what they're up to now.
And it kind of bummed me out at how long Avenue Q stayed around in that.
A long time. But they really did keep rewriting things. I know when it went to London, they rewrote a lot of jokes because the humor is just so different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it was the kind of thing.
But yeah, it was on Broadway for like 3 or 4 years, and then went off Broadway until like a year ago.
I would have loved to have seen a Avenue Q revival during the Trump era with like some really hard rewrites.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would have loved to see that, but it was still running, so they couldn't, you can't, you know, it's, the you can't put the train back on the tracks if it's still running.
Yeah, I remember one of the first conversations you and IJ ever had about musicals was, I was like, I still want to see Avenue Q, and you're like, it needs to close so it can come back.
Yeah.
It's an opinion you've had about many shows, and now look where we are, Jay.
Yeah, but now
they've all closed so that they can come back.
Yeah, but now, what have I done? What have I done?
It's your fault.
No, but now I kind of want Avenue 2. I kind of want it.
Yeah, because I mean, they're, it's almost like, you have a, what they call the quarter life crisis when you're like 22 years old and you're out of college. You have like, not a full on extra crisis when you hit 30, but like you have a little bit more of an adjustment. And I would like to see Princeton's adjustment to that.
Yeah.
Or even if it was, even if they jumped forward even further, it was just like midlife crisis. But I think the 30-year-old would work too.
I think, well, the one thing I really appreciate about Avenue Q is that, like, yes, it's a very good execution of like making fun of Sesame Street and like, you know, good jokes. But I think it also, weirdly, a show with that has puppets on stage actually does a pretty good representation of what moving to New York City in your 20s is like.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking-lutely.
I thought of that this morning while we were listening through. I was just like, oh yeah, purpose is like playing through everyone's head the day they get off the train.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I moved here for a specific reason, and then those reasons shift because they have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wish I could go back to college is such a, I remember listening to that when I was like 14, and I was just like, oh, interesting that they all kind of wish. And then I like went through college, and then like 3 years after college, I was like, I get it now.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I do want a meal planned.
Yeah.
Yep. And it's weird because like when you're in college, or at least when I was in college, I kept thinking, I can't wait to be out of school because I feel like I'm always being watched and I'm always on the clock. Because even I'm not at school, I'm doing homework. And it is nice to not have that. But then it's like, oh, now I have a little more free time. But if I don't use the non-free time I have, I will die.
Yeah.
Cool. Yep. Hand me a sword so I can die in Valhalla. Because I have to survive now. I think that, I haven't listened to this album in a while. And I still think it's really, really good. But it hit me now that I have a more discerning Broadway palette. It's half instant classics and half songs that are just sort of fine. And none of the songs are bad. There are no bad songs. But like for every Schadenfreude, there's a Fantasies Come True, which is fine, but it's not nearly as good. There is, not unlike Hairspray that we were talking about last time, there is kind of a two-tiered level of quality. But this album, the songs that are out of the park good are like, no wonder it was a sensation because like, they're still in my head even when I'm not really like listening to the album a lot sometimes. They'll pop because they're also good.
And
they're so like true to its aim of getting that quarter life crisis feel that it feels so human and real, and through the lens of the Sesame Street parody makes it even more interesting, you know?
Yeah.
I also say, I was about to say in 2003, but no, forever. Not every song from a musical has to be the best thing you've ever heard.
Yeah.
There are some songs that are just there to move the plot along and be palatable and nice to hear.
But the ones that bang are so structurally sound that it really carries the whole thing.
Yeah, you can also really hear just the young Robert Lopez.
Yeah.
In some, and it's just like, oh, like, of course the South Park guys were like, oh, this is who we should team up with for Book of Mormon.
Yep.
And you then hear it's a lot just of Mormon. Hilarious that then Disney was like, hey, you guys.
Yeah, you hear a lot of Mormon in there. Like,
yeah,
you kind of really feel do. Like they, and that's what I think makes Mormon so good, that it was just like, oh, these are three guys who all know exactly what they're doing at all times.
Yeah,
like they all like the structure is just that sound that like it's hard to do a bad production of Mormon. It's hard to do a bad production of Avenue Q.
Yeah,
like because it's just the bones are there.
Yeah.
And also the bones of Avenue Q are so, even more so than Mormon, they're so simple. It's just puppets. They're meant to be seen as puppets.
Yeah.
You just stand there in your black turtleneck and they can look at you or they look at the puppet. You do a parody of Sesame Street, so you just do it real earnest and the material kind of carries you. It's so...
Which is, in a way, what led him to a Disney career is that, like, these songs are so... twinkly and nice.
Yeah, they are.
You just change the tone of the lyrics.
Yeah.
Because especially It's a Fine, Fine Line is one of my favorite songs of musical theater ever.
Yeah, it's a really good song.
Very good.
It sounds like Disney music, Sesame Street music. They did a good job.
Yeah, there's a Fine, Fine Line could be in Frozen.
Yeah, Kristen Bell can sing that song for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I would see her play Kate Monster.
In a heartbeat. In 2003.
Yeah, I kind of want to see a Kate Monster puppet that kind of looks like her, too.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, she'd be great. I was just trying to think, in 2003, was she in New York doing Broadway stuff? Or was she already in LA? I don't know. Is there a world where she auditioned?
She was doing Veronica Mars at that point, right?
In 2003?
I think so.
Yeah, probably. I don't remember exactly when it started.
Should we move on to Little Loves?
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
It's about that time.
It's about that time.
My Little Loves. The Bad Idea Bears are just great. They're so funny. Like, it's such an easy trope, and it's just funny every time they're on stage. And I also love that, like, it's fun that the Bad Idea Bears are played by the two auxiliary puppet people. They're played by the people that are usually filling out the other arm of Trekkie Monster or Nikki, because Nikki and Trekkie are built, they're full hand puppets. So they're built like Cookie Monster, where it's just like there's real hands in there, but you need someone else to do it because you have one hand and your hand working the mouth. Instead of fill them out, you have two folks. So like, it's fun that like the auxiliary puppeteers get some characters. I also like Little Loves. I Wish I Could Go Back to College is my favorite song on the show.
Oh.
It's not really about the message of it. I just think sonically it's just like a really good song. People get a good time, like there's some moments where people can like really sing in there, and it's just like I don't know, I just really like that song. Puppet Sex is always funny. Sorry, it's funny. Mm-hmm. Some people find it very offensive, and I'm like, why? It's hilarious. It's the silliest thing.
Yeah.
Also, you're telling me, like, when you're alone with the puppets, you have not made them kiss. That's what Andrew Girl does to her Barbies.
Yeah,
like,
man. You're telling me you're gonna meet a clone of yourself, and you're not gonna learn how you kiss, and you're not gonna smooch them? Come on now.
This show rides a very, very interesting line, because when I had just heard about the show, I thought it was just like, oh, it's Dirty Muppets. That sounds funny, but whatever. And then I watched it. I was like, oh, no, this is the existential Muppets.
Yeah.
With some Dirty Muppets in there, too, because it's hilarious. But, like, it rides that line between, hey, this is just silly puppets having sex, and also, like, these puppets are having crises.
Yeah.
That you have gone through, listener. Like, you know.
For Now is maybe one of my favorite, like, finales of any show, because it, like, so excellently drives home the point. It's like it runs that fence of like not being too obvious, but also being very clear at the same time.
Yeah.
Ugh, it gives me the feels every time.
Mm-hmm. I've got some. Two of them were yours. I wish I could go back to college is one of my favorite songs on that album. It's probably the song that hits me emotionally the hardest because, and I'll spare you all the details, but I didn't really have much fun in college because my mental health was in the toilet. And so I did college wrong. And when they say, I wish I could go back to college, they're like, oh, cause I was having so much fun. And I feel that, but I also feel like when I think I wish I could go back to college, I'm like, I need to go back so I can do it properly because yeah. I had no fun and it still upsets me. The background vocals on You Can Be As Loud As The Hell You Want When You're Making Love, which is the Bad Idea Bears, I think, with the loud as the hell, loud as the hell you want. They're really fun harmonies.
Yeah.
Like funky. Yeah. For Now, I think, is one of my favorite closers ever because not only is it a nice kind of, it's not a big finish. It idea-wise is a big finish, but like it's a slow, calming note to kind of end it on. And what it does that I think is really great is it basically gives a little bit of a middle finger to every story you've ever seen. Cause it's like, hey, until we're all dead, like the story's not over. So like, hey, everything's great for now. Hopefully it'll stay, but like life doesn't work that way.
Just to say, yeah.
Yeah. So it's really, really ballsy. And I always have appreciated that. And it almost kind of like, it's one of those endings where it almost makes you a little mad because like, oh, stop being right when I'm happy. Like, but it really, really is good. And then my last mini little love, when I first discovered the show and I was tweeting up a storm about Broadway, which is partly how this podcast came to be.
True.
I tweeted something about Avenue Q where I was like, oh, you know, Brian from Avenue Q says he wants to be a comic, but I don't see him like putting in the work and doing mics and stuff. And the guy who plays him in the UK version tweeted at me and goes, no, he hits the pavement. He just is really bad. So his actor's secret was that Brian actually is working really hard. Because I thought he was just like, oh, I want to be a comic, but like wasn't actually hitting open mics. He's like, oh no, he doesn't. He's just not good.
That's
and I think that's cool how you can play that character different ways.
Well, he MCs like, whatever Lucy the Slut is doing.
Yeah. Poorly.
Yeah. I'm not wearing underwear today. I've seen that joke. Like, I'm sure you have too, Jay. That set was like, there's no end to this joke. I'm just not wearing on. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's just yeah, I think this is funny. Okay, yeah. Well, I don't.
Nope. Where are you going with it? I don't know. Well, okay. Please don't then.
Well, see you later.
Yep.
Big gulps, all right?
Huh? That's hilarious.
And that's all my loves.
My little love is something that I still quote to my parents, and this morning I reminded myself it was from Avenue Q. And that is anytime someone brings up a like an old song from musicals that like might be from the 1940s, my dad will just go, Broadway musicals from the 1940s, High Button Shoes and Pal Joey, because that's just the lyric in the middle of If You Were Gay.
Oh, and now that since we did that episode where the word of the week was encores, now I didn't know what High Button Shoes was, and I'm like, oh, it's that show that Kimberly thought the plot makes no sense. Yeah, so now I'm like,
it's nothing to do with shoes.
Nor their high buttons.
Yeah, nor high buttons. I don't know. But truly, I say like high button shoes and Pal Joey like all the time. They're one in the same in my head, and it is because of that. It's because me and my dad would just yell that at each other. That's what Avenue Q brought to my life.
That's a good little love. I like that.
Yeah.
That's very good. That warms my heart.
Oh, now you'll notice it when you're around my parents.
High button shoes, Pal Joey.
And then you close it with Lion King.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Pretty much. And it's a fine, fine line. I also just like this show. It was also, I don't know if it was the beginning. Maybe I saw the documentary and then there were like supplementary like YouTube videos I found of like behind the scenes at Avenue Q, but Stephanie DeBruzio did like a whole get ready with me before that was a thing, but it was just like they followed her backstage. It was probably like a CBS Sunday morning or something.
Yeah,
but they followed her backstage before her thing and she was doing her own makeup. And it was this like crazy light switch in my head where I was like, she's just using normal makeup. She's just using her own makeup. And she's doing it herself, which I feel like people don't realize is what people do.
Yeah.
She was doing her own makeup and she was like using the same foundation that I was using at the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, you don't have to use a stick of Ben Nye. You don't have to then like translucent powder your face.
Yeah.
You don't, everyone doesn't have to have mascara on.
Yeah.
It was a crazy eye opener for me. And then from then on, like, I think I went back to high school and I was like, guys, you know, we can just use our own makeup. And everyone was like, what are you talking about? And then from then on, I was like, we can use a little more, but like, we can use our own makeup. And then I became that girl that was just like, we don't need to use the communal stick of Ben Nye ale.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Communal stick of anything. No, thank you.
It was disgusting.
In COVID times, are you crazy?
I know. But yeah, so Avenue Q was weirdly like instrumental in my life. Like if I think of the albums that were on rotation in middle school and high school, Avenue Q was in there.
Yeah.
It's in the 5 CD changer in the CRV. That's that. What do you think Harold does at this show?
I think Harold actually turns his own phone off because I think Harold took everyone's a little bit racist like the wrong way. And he's like,
oh, strapping in. Okay.
He's loving it. Loving it. I think this is one of those shows that Harold's like, oh, maybe this is for me.
Right? Oh, I'll learn how to turn my phone off just for this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if it does go off, I feel like one of the puppets is going to walk him through it, but in a way that is just designed to humiliate him.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He should definitely leave because this show is great. Like I said, it's not quite as full on. Every track is amazing like when I first found it, but it's still so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a review?
There is a review. This is from Dylan McDowell. Subject is brings a smile every time. 5 stars. Please leave Broadway Baby 5 stars and a nice review on the podcast app. It really helps our numbers. We appreciate it. Kimberly, Jay, and Alex have phenomenal chemistry and rapport. Listening each week brings such a smile to my face and leaves me with new theater knowledge. Would recommend to theater lovers and Broadway babies. And babies is in quotes.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh, cute. Yep. All right. Well, then it's time. Do you have a puppet for this audio only medium? Just say yes. No one will know. Okay. All right. Sing out, Louise.
Right now you are trapped at home and feeling really shitty and knowing no one likes your tweets sort of makes me giddy. Sorry, buddy, online nature, nothing I can do. It's Podenfreude. Make me happy, no one follows you. Well, that's not very constructive to make an online community. Constructive? Have you met the internet? Did you ever laugh when a YouTube channel gets demonetized? Or a narcissist who gets 0 likes have sadness in their eyes. Don't you feel all smug and smarmy watching improvisers draw a blank? That's Podenfreude, smiling when your online efforts tank. Podenfreude? What's that, some kind of password? Kinda. It's NetSpeak for happiness at the sadness of others. Happiness at sadness? Wow, that is from the internet. Canceled celebrity, give a gritted teeth apology. Or watching a TikTok superstar bomb at stand-up comedy. Listening to a brand new podcast, say everyone like and subscribe. No! Podenfreude, knowing that most podcasts don't. Knowing that most podcasts don't. Knowing that most podcasts don't survive. Podenfreude.
But again, like and subscribe and hit that bell to the YouTube that you do so well.
Wrong show.
Everything in life is only for now.